Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, how much money do you think you need to have stashed away in your superannuation account to live the kind of retired life you fantasise about? Now, don't tell me 10 million. Of course, I know I have those dreams too. We've won the lottery and then all of a sudden we wake up. The idea of needing $1 million in your superannuation account to retire well has been floating around for some time. You hear it all the time. About a million, they say, for a couple. Yet a couple of years back, the average retirement superannuation account had around $292,000 in it for men and $138,000 for women. In other words, a long way short of that. I mean, frankly, who has got $1 million? Our guest tonight reckons that if you're worrying about not having $1 million or even $500,000 on your super account, then you might be panicking for no good reason. Because, he says, with good planning, a retired couple can live perfectly well, even with an odd overseas trip thrown in, with far, far less than that. Nick Bruning's a financial planner. He's the author of Don't Panic, Why You Don't Need $1 Million to Retire Well. I guess with news like that, he's probably pretty welcome in the studio. Nick, good evening. Welcome Philip, to Nightlife.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's probably the most powerful emotion out there, isn't it? Fear. Fear that we're going to miss out, fear that we don't have enough. And I come from an industry that preys on that emotion. It's, you know, we come to a point in life where perhaps we're in our 50s, 60s, and we sit down there and we do some basic sums. And we might say, okay, I'm going to need $45,000, $50,000 to retire. And I want to keep my money pretty safe.
Yep.
Get the old calculator out, you plug it in and say, right, I'm working on sort of bank accounts. So we plug it in and we come up, $50,000 divided by 3%. We come up with a figure of 1.6, 1.7 million bucks. So then you head off to your local financial advisor who sits down there and he goes, oh, yes, Phil, yes, no, that's terrible. And when you total everything up, you've only got, you know, 200 grand in the super and 20,000 in this and that. And you panic. So the next thing you know, you've signed up for some sort of investment program, perhaps, off the plan apartment somewhere or some sort of U-Boot computer program.
Almond plantations in Singapore.
Got them all. Mm. And then you're a sucker for it. And really what this is all about is that people in that position is just what you're not told is how the system works to support people in that position. Mm-hmm. And so there is nothing wrong with having $1 million or $2 million, and that money gives you choice. Gives you choice about retiring early, perhaps. But I reckon that someone with $270,000, a couple, and let's be honest, debt-free, owning your own home, can quite easily generate about 48 grand a year tax-free using relatively low-risk investments.
What did you say?
About 48,000 bucks
off
a year.
What?
About 250, 270 grand, somewhere in there.
Really?
Yeah. Look, the reason
Hang
is...
On, so you're saying that you can, off 250 or 270, you could generate an income of $48,000.
Yeah. And because what you're not told about...
That's tax-free, of course.
It is. Mm. It is. What you're not told about is you're not told about how the Centrelink system operates and how our retirement income system integrates with the savings that we've got. So in that, we've got a full-age pension of around about $35,000, $36,000 a year. Our super might be invested in a thing called an account-based pension, which many people have heard about, paying $12,500, $13,000 a year. When you add those two together, there's your $48,000. Now, it also reflects reality for a lot of people. And reality for a lot of people is to say, okay, well, what's my end game going to be? Am I going to retire, leave, or go, you know, shuffle off this mortal coil and leave everything for the kids? Most people don't want that approach. They actually say, right, well, look, I'm going to have a good time while I can, recognizing also that as you get older, your cost of living is going to decline a bit.
Mm. Give us the $48,000 again. So,
you're looking at about $13,000 or so from the account-based pension.
That's off the $270,000.
Yep, yep.
So that's an account-based pension.
Pension, yes, drawing about 5%. Around that figure.
Okay.
And then you've got about $35,700, slightly means tested.
What's the account-based pension? You can't spend more than 7% of it, is it?
You can take out as much as you want.
Oh, you can actually.
You can take out. But what you obviously want to do is make it last as long as possible. So by drawing out the minimum amount, which at 65 is 5% of the account balance, but at that level, you're getting a very minimal impact on the age pension, which the full-age pension for a couple is $35,916 bucks a year. And that goes up twice per year.
Okay, so if you only draw out the $13,000, you're not going to impact the age pension, is what you're
saying.
That's
exactly right. Well, a very minor amount through a thing called deeming, but at the end of the day, it's a minimal impact on your age pension.
Mm. So if you own your own house, does it matter what your own house is worth?
No, and that's one of the other things, is that one of the sort of bizarre things you like of our system is that your home is completely exempt from Centrelink's means testing, irrespective of its value. Now, there's some aspects about size, what sort of a property you're on, how many acres it is, 5 acres or 2 hectares under the new currency. Mm-hmm. But that's specifically exempt. So, you know, you have people in properties worth a couple of million bucks. None of that's assessed by Centrelink in calculating your age pension.
Mm. Okay, so provided with owner-owned house, we're debt-free. If we had 270, that gives us an account-based pension of 13.
Yeah.
Plus we're eligible for the full age, well, yeah, nearly the full age.
Pretty much close to
of
it.
Of 39.
Yeah. No, not quite.
35.9. Yep. Okay. So that gives us 48.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Tax-free.
Yeah. And then as you get older...
Why does the Association of Superannuation Funds...
Yeah.
I mean... You might say they're an industry lobby group. Well, they
well,
are.
You
well,
might.
They
are. In fact, you would.
They say the retirement standard estimates that singles will need $545,000 for a comfortable retirement. Couples will need combined retirement savings of $640,000. Why do they say that?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know, because if you actually do the sums on it, and look, and you might load in things like we want to, you know, buy new cars and do all of those sorts of things. And that's what I was saying at the outcome. Having more money actually gives you choice to do those sorts of things. But don't think for a moment that people that have got those modest sums of money are living a particularly tough life, because in that, the other thing that happens is as we get older, the capital need diminishes. So we actually don't need as much capital as we get into our 70s and 80s, because the cost of living starts to decline.
What's $48,000 translate to in as a taxable income? So
it's probably about 60, 61, 62,000 pre-tax.
Not a huge amount.
No, it's not, but then we're not paying any tax, of course, and that's the thing. And that, see, that's the other point.
No, yeah, I know you're not paying any tax, but we're still, you know, you're still paying all the same costs. Groceries don't cost less because you're retired.
Yes and no, but of course...
You know, paint for the house doesn't. And
it's true.
Plumbers and repair people don't cost less. But, I mean, cars don't cost less. The cost of living is only is the same or only increase?
Well, what we also find too is that people's cost of living doesn't actually change much from their working life and through to retirement. So if you're someone that likes to go out for a cup of coffee and all that,
that's a myth,
things,
isn't it? There's a bit of a myth going there, isn't there?
In terms of
what that we're often told, oh well, when you retire, life will be cheaper.
Well, it's not.
It's not.
No, absolutely not. It's because if you're going out and playing golf or having coffee with the girls on a Tuesday, you're still going to be doing those sorts of things in retirement. So that doesn't change. But what does change is as you get older, as I say, things do start to slow down a bit. We don't, you know, you just look at parents and grandparents and stuff like that. They're not actually spending as much as they were in the early years of retirement, in the latter years of retirement.
Mm. $48,000 a year, though, that's less than $1,000 a week.
Yeah, but
that's two people.
Yep, that's right. But
that's not a lot.
No, but you're also forgetting about the pension concession card, and depending on your circumstances, that can save you a lot, because you're looking at $6.40 for your PBS listed scripts, capped at about $388 per year. In many states, you're getting discounts on your rates, water supply charges, things like that as well. Mm. So, you know, the cost of living does change, or it's the same, but you're also getting discounts that you might not have enjoyed in your working life.
Mm. Yeah, you have to own your own house for this to work.
Absolutely. And there's no question that someone that's a renter, and, you know, certain cities around this country, rent's just horrendous at the moment. And even rent assistance is very, very modest when you actually look at, you know, how much they actually receive. It's about $125 a fortnight. So someone that doesn't own their own home, it's tougher, no question about it. And someone that doesn't have the savings to supplement the pension, it's really, really tough.
Mm. Yes, when you figure out how much you need, almost nobody's very good. I'm hopeless at it too. I mean, almost nobody's very good at actually having a clear idea, writing down what you actually spend money on.
And that's part of the process.
In other words, figuring out how much your life costs.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things we also find is that some of the calculators online or whatever are just a bit too general. So it's really important to actually sit down and go through all of the expenses that you actually incur. And that's why things like these retirement standards, you need to be really careful with those things, because you'll often find that they vary quite a bit from what you actually spend. So the idea is to go through and sit down, you know, things like internet costs and the pet costs and all those sorts of things, list them all out there and work out what your annual total is and work to that figure. Because on top of that, you're going to have your trips and the fun things that you're going to do. But we're talking about the base cost of living here. Mm. It's not including your trips and stuff overseas. But that doesn't say that you can't do those things as well.
Mm. You've got a big list of items that people sometimes forget to account for when they think about retirement spending.
Mm.
Let's run through a few of those.
Okay. Well, you've got things that are coming up into the future that you have to think about. So certainly aged care, and that's a big issue at the moment, the cost of aged care. There are going to be things that we don't take into account, perhaps of medical costs, even with top hospital cover and ancillary cover and stuff, often you're up for those additional expenses associated with those sorts of things. Mm. But probably the biggies are going to be things like your accommodation, aged care accommodation, and medical expenses.
Mm. Yeah, exactly, exactly. What about if you're going? So I suppose if you're going into retirement with a mortgage still hanging around you, I mean, a lot of people will,
right? Well,
with a bit of a mortgage, maybe.
Yeah, and in fact, it's a looming problem, and one of the things that we would certainly not want is cash flow going out supporting a mortgage. So one of the strategies that we look at very closely is how to get rid of that mortgage as quickly as we can, even using these things like transition to retirement, all of those sort of strategies that people throw around with the express purpose of reducing that debt as much as we can. In fact, I think it's one of the big problems that's coming up now is that we have a system now where the lenders are actually taking your superannuation into account. It's only in the last couple of years or so where the superannuation is actually an exit strategy to pay off the mortgage. Now, so
people doing that? Are they?
Well, they are. And we're seeing folks that are in their 50s and 60s, well, perhaps not 60s, but certainly 40s and 50s with, you know, a few $100,000 in their mortgage. They may well have $700,000 in super, but by the time they clear out that mortgage, because you absolutely want to be debt-free in retirement, it has a huge impact on how much you actually have to retire with.
Mm. And you can use your super to clean the mortgage, can you?
Well, you can once you get to a currently age 57. You can embark on a thing called transition to retirement account-based pension, which is a lot of terminology to basically say you can take out some of your superannuation. At 60, you've got another condition of release for super, which is you've got to permanently retire from a job, retire from a job. Mm. And at 65, most funds will allow you to access your super. But that's absolutely the first thing that we'd look at is to say, well, let's clear all the debt off because that's just simply dead money.
Hmm. Yeah, Bruce in Canberra says, I've been retired for 5 years and the cost of living does not reduce. Petrol rates, insurance, house, groceries all go up astronomically.
Yeah.
But my income hasn't. Many people are not entitled to an age pension, even though they're not wealthy. Can we go through the entitlement to an age pension?
Sure.
A number of questions. A number of people are saying, look, are we talking about couples or singles?
Couples,
with these fingers. So the $48,000 was for a couple.
That's for a couple, yeah. And typically singles spend around about 75% of what a couple spends. So, I mean, there's a bit of a tweak in the system in that the pension pays about 70%. But from what we see when we get people to actually track what their expenses are, it drops by about 25%. That's actually shifted a bit, Phil, because in the past, a lot more of those expenses were variable. But we look at things like power and energy costs. A lot of those are fixed costs now. And as you know, when you walk in a room and turn the light switch on, it doesn't matter if there's one person in the room or five people, those costs are going to be the same. So it's about a 25% reduction when a couple becomes a single person. Yes, those costs will appreciate, but that figure is not a static figure either. That $48,000 is going to be going up, partly because you've got indexation on the pension, which occurs twice per year in March and September. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the thresholds change, and we'll talk about that in a second with entitlements, but the thresholds for a part-age pension also are going up effectively three times per year. And you end up with a situation too where you might not qualify for a pension right at the start of retirement, but as you're going through and doing these things, the thresholds are constantly going up. Perhaps the amount in savings is coming down as you're spending and enjoying things, and at some point those two cross over. Mm. And at that point is when you start to look at these other benefits.
Mm.
So entitlement-wise, to not receive a pension in Australia, as I mentioned, your house is specifically exempt. A single can have assets over and above the family home of $564,000 under the asset test, and a couple $848,000 over and above the family home.
That includes superannuation.
Yeah, it's pretty much everything. But look, there's another thing that people start to include.
What do assets mean?
Well, that's the thing. So it's all of your sort of liquid and obvious things, your bank accounts and your shares, those sorts of things.
Is it your furniture?
Well, interestingly enough, a lot of people put down the insured value for furniture and for cars and stuff. In fact, it's the scrap value of those things. So Centrelink will often accept a value of about $10,000. And even though you might have your 1982 Commodore insured for $20,000 because it's a really good car, in fact, if you took it down and traded traded in, you'd be lucky to get 1,500. So it's about using those things. And in fact, that's another part of the strategy, is to make sure that Centrelink are depreciating those values. Because again, we assume that Centrelink's doing a lot of this stuff for us, but they actually don't. So it's really important for us to keep on top of it by notifying them of these things coming down in value. So 848, and then you've got an income test. And for a single, they would need to be earning income of less than 52,000, and for a couple around about $80,000 or less to receive a part pension. And under our system, whichever test produces the lowest pension is the one that they'll latch onto. So you may well pass on an income test, but fail on the asset test.
Mm. How much does the average retired couple spend a year?
It varies, and it depends on lifestyle. You'll have people that are, you know, I use the line, you've got chooks and veggies out the back who lead a very modest lifestyle. Mm. We find that there's a bit of a surge once you get to starting to look after kids, grandkids in particular. But typically, we see somewhere between about $45,000 and $55,000 a year on their basic cost of living, Phil. Mm-hmm. So that's just sort of putting food on the table and running a basic household. If you've got a beach house down on the coast somewhere, then obviously that's going to add to the expenses. And as I said, if you're looking after the grandies, that's going to add to the expenses. But if you like the bell curve, 45 to 55.
So the average couple spends, and that's just living ordinary life.
Yeah. Well, living the life that you were leading and enjoying prior to retirement.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So in other words, leading the same life.
Yeah, pretty much the same lifestyle.
Not a smaller lifestyle.
No. Because like I say, most people, and it's about actually replacing that core income, I think it's important, because you've got these things like, you know, the trips and stuff, which we would love to take. But those are the sorts of luxuries that you might be able to enjoy as time moves on a bit. But as I say, it's about that 250, 270 range at the start of retirement. But in fact, as you get older and your life expectancy starts to diminish, the amount of capital required actually comes back a bit.
Mm. And a single?
Well, as I say, about 75%. So the singles actually cop a bit of a rough stick, because the impact of the assets and the means test is much harsher for a single person. So it's almost requiring you to spend more of your savings to keep that income up to a top level. So, you know, you're probably looking at about 35 to 42 grand for a single to be reasonably comfortable.
Mm. Yeah, you lay out a couple of case studies in your book, don't you, when you say that you... Take us through a couple of those case studies.
Well, we start off with a couple that retire. I have to sort of flick through to it. But we basically follow them through to the point where they've started retirement, they start enjoying things. Mm-hmm. One of the partners dies, and so we're back to a single person. And how do they fund that retirement over that period of time?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as is often the case, there's another relationship that starts up. In this case, someone that's much younger than our retiree. And so it's understanding how we can make use of the rules and the regulations. For example, a lot of people wouldn't realise that money held in superannuation in what we call accumulation phase, when it's building up, is actually exempt from Centrelink's means testing until you actually get to age pension age. So, you know, you might have a couple where one's eligible for the pension and the other one isn't, where you can actually start to move things around a little bit in order to access those benefits for the person that's older. And we also use it for disability to support pensions quite a bit as well.
Right. If you've got money in an accumulation account, can you take some of it out and keep half in an accumulation account and half in a pension?
Yeah. In fact, what's one of the sort of the big areas of confusion, people think that when they get to retirement, they have to move the whole lot to an account-based pension. That's not the way. In fact, once the money's in the system, you can pretty much switch it in any way you like. Right. We often see that when someone goes into retirement, you know, goes nuts because they're not working and they need to get back into the workforce just for the sanity side of things. They'll often put the superannuation pension phase back into accumulation.
Oh, so you can switch it back and forth.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm not sure that most people know that.
Well, I don't think they do. And there's also...
So once you can take the money out of accumulation, put it into a pension, but then decide, oh, hang on, Larry's offering me a job for 2 years, I'm going to take it.
Go back.
I can put the money back in the accumulation, and then later on I could put it back into a pension.
But wait, there's more. It's a bit like one of those sort of TV things. Once it's had it satisfied the condition of release and the money's available, unprotected, unrestricted, unpreserved, you can actually still take the money out. So you may well be working part-time, have your money in accumulation. You might take out, you know, $10,000, $15,000 for the trip to Europe.
Out of your accumulation, which you're allowed to do.
Yep.
Once you're over what?
Once you've satisfied the condition of release. So if you're over 60 years of age or 65.
You can just take the money out and just...
Yeah. And I mean, that's the trick, isn't it? I mean, one of the problems is that once you take the money out, it's sort of a one-way door. You can't put it back in. And that's one of the disciplines, I suppose, is for people to be a bit careful about what they do take
out. You can put money back in your accumulation account, you can keep adding to it, can't you?
Yeah, well, that's right. Until up to 65, you've got to satisfy what I call a breath test. So you've got to be breathing. 65 to 74, you've got to satisfy a work test, which says it's 40 hours in a 30-day consecutive period. The rules are about to change where you can actually do it in the year following that as well.
Right.
And then the other one is the super downsizer, which is for people that are over 75, which is when you sell the family home and you can put in up to $300,000.
Okay, so over 65, you can keep adding to your accumulation account, provided you've got a full-time job.
No, not a full-time job. You need to work 40 hours in a 30-day period in the year that you're contributing.
Okay, so you're provided you're working.
A job, you could do a job for a week, Philip.
That's right, provided you satisfy that
test.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Okay, all right, look, I'm sure people have got lots of questions. Let's start with Peter. Hello, Peter.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Peter.
I'm just asking the question, if I take a lump sum out of my superannuation, can I still keep contributing without taking more out the next year?
Yeah, so the two rules that we're talking about are the ability to contribute to superannuation. And as I was just explaining, that requires if you're... Can I ask how old you are, Peter?
Yes, I'm 66.
66. So in other words, you'll need to satisfy that work test of 40 hours in a consecutive 30-day period. So the legislation doesn't actually say you have to be doing your existing job. So if you're a truckie or something, you don't actually have to go back to being a truckie. You just simply have to do some work for gain or reward that lasts for 40 hours in a 30-day consecutive period. So providing you satisfy that test, you can put money into super. Now, you're also constrained by these things called contribution caps, and that says that if you're putting money into super, if you want to claim a tax deduction for it, or someone's claiming a tax deduction for it, it's restricted to $25,000. But over and above that, you could put in what's called a non-concessional contribution, which is just ordinary money that you've already paid tax on, or an inheritance, or winnings, or whatever, and that can be up to $100,000, providing you've satisfied that work test.
Yes, okay. And I can still, on the contribution side of it, I don't have to make a drawing the next year if
Because if you're in, if you're still in, and understand there's two modes of super. There's the accumulation phase where we're putting money in and parking it there. When we get to a point where we want to start drawing on it, the most efficient way is one of these things called an account-based pension. So if you've still got an account-based pension running at the same time, you can actually have two things running at the once, one accumulation and one pension. If you've still got a pension, you will still have to draw money out under the rules of the pension. But there is nothing to stop you converting the pension back to accumulation.
Oh, thank you very much.
There you go.
Good on you, Peter. Thank you. Bye-bye. Diana, hello.
Oh, hello. How are you this evening?
I'm well.
Hi, Diana.
My head always hurts when I discuss money, Diana.
How can I help?
Look, I'm just making inquiry. I have roughly about $320,000 in my super.
Mm-hmm.
I'm single. I have paid off my home, and I am debt-free.
Yeah.
So I would really love to retire sooner than later,
mm-hmm.
just to enjoy life. And would I be entitled to a age pension down the track?
Yeah, Diana, you would, based on those figures. So you own your own home, which is fantastic. You've got the mortgage paid off, which is superb. And over and above that, we've got $320,000. So this is where you start to have choices. You might choose to perhaps wind down to working 2 or 3 days per week. Now, if there's not enough income from that, then you might start to look at drawing some of the money from super to top it up. But, you know, as it stands at the moment with $320,000, you'd certainly be entitled to a part pension. The full age pension for a single person is $23,823. Without sort of working through the numbers, I'd suggest that you're probably looking at a pension of, probably about $14,000, $15,000 a year there. But here's the really silly thing. With an asset test, every $1,000 you're over the threshold reduces your pension by $3 per fortnight. So what we do as we spend that money and as it starts to come down, the first thing we do is we're into Centrelink every other week to say, guess what? I've got $10,000 less or whatever the figure is in my account-based pension. Because if you're asset tested, every $10,000 would mean an extra $30 per fortnight in your pension from Centrelink.
Right. Okay. It sometimes sounds also gobbledygook to me.
It does a bit. And it does, doesn't it? Yeah. And that's, you know, without sort of pushing the profession, that's what actually good financial planning is about. What we often find is financial planning, often people see it as just a way of flogging an investment. Really good planning is this stuff where you're actually looking at the bread and butter. How do I get a bit more out of Centrelink without rorting it, just simply understanding how the rules work and making use of it. And a good planner will be actually doing these updates for you. It won't be a case of, oh, you know, off you go, Diana, and sort it out. The good planner will actually be running those updates on a regular basis and part of the review program.
So if I was wanting to, I could actually cut my hours down, because at the moment I'm working like, say, 62 hours a fortnight.
Yeah.
So I would love to cut back my hours that I'm working, so I could quite easily possibly do that.
Right. So it's all about cash flow. And the first point of, you've got to start with is actually how much does Diana spend and how much am I going to need? Then you can start to work it back from how much I'm going to earn from employment and then how much top-up income am I going to require from my super or whatever. And then you'd sort of do that forward projection, say, well, actually, how much am I going to have when I get to retirement? Can I ask how old you are, Diana?
62.
So, okay. So you're going to be a 67 model by the time you qualify for the pension. So we're talking 5 years away from now. So you sort of need to do those sums to say, okay, if I'm biting into the capital, how much is it going to cost? And the other thing too is, and I'm all for keeping things as simple as you can. So if you needed, say, $10,000 a year top up between now and retirement, the math can be more complicated, but frankly, I'd just go, well, 10,000 times 5 years is 50 grand. That's what I'm going to need and work it on that basis.
Okay. And I could still sort of do, if I didn't want to fully retire, I could sort of do like a couple of days.
Well, yeah, like the old steak knives ad, but wait, there's more. There's a thing called the working bonus system. So once you reach retirement age, the system actually incentivizes people staying in the workforce. So at the moment, you can earn $250 from employment income, which doesn't count towards Centrelink's income test. That's due to go to $300 per fortnight from July this year. And better still, it actually aggregates. So if you don't actually use your $250 or $300 when it changes, it builds up. And so you could actually go and do nothing for 6 months, let it build up for $3,000, and then perhaps get a job over the summer holidays working in a shop or something like that, if that's what you wanted to do. And you could end up with a period where you earn all that money and not one cent of it affects your Centrelink pension.
Okay. All right.
Good luck with it, Dana.
Thank you so much for your help.
Not at all. Bye-bye. Appreciate your call. Bye-bye. Anne in Brunswick says, can you go through the healthcare card requirements?
Yeah. So
this is a major, can be a major cost when you get older.
There's a couple of cards that we're talking about. So the pension concession cards come with, and let's call it the purple one, comes with anyone that qualifies for a pension. And, you know, the rules used to be different, but if you get like $10 a pension, you get the card. There's a low-income healthcare card, which is based on your taxable income. Now, to qualify for the low-income healthcare card, a single can earn $556 per week and a couple $960 per week without dependents. Once you qualify for that low-income healthcare card, and that's not age-based, it's simply based on income, your income can increase by up to 25% before you'd lose the card. And that card gets you the concessions on your medicine at $6.40 a script. Probably the one that we're talking about is the Commonwealth Seniors Health Card. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a card that's issued by Centrelink. It's based on taxable income. There's a sort of few confusing things with it. But for a single who's over age, pension age, and doesn't otherwise qualify for a pension, the income test there is $54,930 or thereabouts. So if your income's under that, you get this card. And for couples, it's $87,884 combined. And that's the other thing to point out, Philip, is as far as Centrelink's concerned, they view couples and singles as a single entity. So it doesn't have to be both of you earning half of 88. It could be one person earning 88,000 and you'd still qualify for the Commonwealth Seniors Health Card.
Okie doke. Dick Brenning is with us. Calls. Helen is a fan of what you're saying. Hello, Helen.
Oh, hello. It's Helen from downtown Sheridan Bay here.
Hello, Helen.
I just rang up to actually thank you for the books. I followed them quite faithfully and set my retirement up, and then actually had to retire early due to ill health.
I'm sorry about that, yep.
Oh, no, it's fine. And I'm going very well, and my retirement's going well and my funds are going well, and it can be done. It's not a problem.
Yeah. Mm. I think part of it is that it is, you know, Australia, I think, has the third world best retirement income system, but I'd argue it's probably the most complicated. And that's the problem, is that when we get to a point in life when things really should be simple, they actually get mind-blowingly complicated. Let's not go into aged care, which is another thing altogether. But that's the problem, isn't it, Helen, is that it's just knowing the rules and how everything works together. But to me, retirement these days is a bit like standing in front of a maze. You can go in there and sort of bang your way around there, and you know, a few months later, you'll come out the other side. You'll have found your way through. All we're trying to do is to show you the shortcut through the maze on how to get out the other side and actually use the system as best as we possibly can. There's always going to be variances and things that are a little bit different, but you know, a lot of people are like Helen.
Sure, thanks. Yeah,
you just need to plan, yeah, and work it through. Take your time. Centrelink are fantastic. They'll spend time with you, explaining everything and helping you. And you come out the other end okay.
And I put a plug out for an organisation within Centrelink called the Financial Information Service, which gets, you know, sometimes pilloried a little bit because they're very busy people and great people. 1-3-2-3-0-0 is the number you need to call. Financial Information Service, it's the Centrelink number. But they'll actually meet with you for an hour or so and go through your stuff, yep, and sort of show you how to map things out a little bit. And they're a great resource. They're not financial planners. They're financial information people. But a lot of the things that we talk about in the book are exactly the sort of things that Centrelink will tell you themselves about repositioning things and changing the way things are set up so that you maximise your benefits.
Mm.
Yep.
On you, Helen.
So, thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Helen.
Good on you, Helen. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Chris, hello. G'day, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
How are you going?
Good. Yeah, good. What's your question, Chris?
My parents took a home equity loan out,
mm-hmm,
25% to the Commonwealth Bank. Now, is that a reverse mortgage?
Yeah, it is a form of reverse mortgage, and certainly the reverse mortgage market has been quite justifiably, you know, really, it's a terrible thing that a lot of people done. We're dealing with a case at the moment, Phil, where a couple took out a reverse mortgage against a place in Perth. Mm. It was about $50,000, good on 12 years ago. It was a fixed rate mortgage. The mortgage at the moment to repay the interest is $123,000. But get this, there's a break cost. The break cost is another $110,000. It's just criminal, this thing.
Yeah.
So a home equity loan is a form of reverse mortgage. Now, one thing about reverse mortgages, they kind of do have a place, but I'd almost put it as a product of last resort. What's really interesting is that Centrelink are set to expand the pension loan scheme from July this year. Now, it was part of the federal government's announcements. I'm pretty sure it's through Parliament. But the pension loan scheme Mark II, if you like, will allow you to access up to 150% of the full-aged pension per fortnight. Now, it's like a reverse mortgage. It's secured against the family home. But for starters, the interest rate is much less than the commercial rate. It's about 5.25%, and I don't think it's changed for, you know, 15, 20 years. When you sell the home or you leave the home, yes, that loan needs to be repaid from the proceeds of the house sale, but it's a better proposition, and particularly for someone that perhaps has got a very valuable property, they've got their aged care things perhaps sorted out, and in a later stage of life, they might look at a pension loan scheme just to top up the income if they're not in a position to access funds otherwise.
Okay, Chris.
Does that mean when they die, my inheritance will be worth nearly zilch?
Well, it'll depend obviously on the interest rate being charged and how long the reverse mortgage has been running. So, yes, you're right, but you can get a statement, and I'm sure your folks get one quite regularly, showing what the loan amount is, and then when the property's sold, that lender has a security or a charge over the property, and they'll recover their funds first, and then you'll get the balance.
As to whether it's not worth nothing at all, that just depends on the figures, Chris. Okay, thank you. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Greg, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to make a couple of comments the first of all, I understand the book starts, the title of your book is Don't Panic, something or other.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
The word of advice is for the people listening, the messages are much better received if you slow down a bit and don't panic and begin with information about whether the information you're giving out relates to couples or singles, as we've already discussed tonight, and whether it relates to pre-tax or after-tax figures.
Mm.
That is fundamental, and that should be given out with every time you give out figures.
That's a fair point. Just with respect to singles and couples, as I've said, it is a couples rate, 48,000, and we do find that singles spend about three quarters of that. With respect to tax, the tax system changes quite dramatically. In fact, there's a chapter in there dealing with tax, and particularly for retirees. Once we get into those retirement years, we start to access things like the Senior in Australia Pensioners Tax Offset, which is worth about $2,200 per individual. We've also got things like the Low Income Tax Offset. So what we actually find is that a single can earn about $33,000 a year on conventional taxable income and not pay tax, thanks to those credits and offsets. And a couple can spend around, or can earn around about $57,000 a year, and again, with these tax credits and offsets, not pay tax. So hopefully that clears it up for people. And I guess that's also a point about investing using products like superannuation funds and all those sorts of things. There's many a time when we sit down with someone and look at how things are structured. And, you know, people say, oh, I've got to put money into super. Well, yeah, at the end of the day, superannuation is a tax vehicle, right? Mm. If we're not actually going to be saving any tax by putting the money into super, then why do it? You know, because you're going to be paying the fees and the costs associated with the super fund. So there's many a situation where we look at someone's portfolio and say, you know what? Well, you're actually not going to pay any tax anyway. So some of these U-Butte things aren't necessarily going to help you.
Can I make one more quick point?
Sure. Sure.
Each of us approaching retirement age have 40 years or so of life experience of managing our own finances, and each year we sit down, do our tax, or sit down with our accountant and do our tax. To advise people to sit down and try and work out where you write a list of where all your costs go, or use a list like you produce, is just bunkum, because each of us have 40 years' experience of working out our own financial situation and where our money goes.
We're still pretty poor. Rotten at it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, and roughly how much we can save each year.
Yeah.
So if we want our circumstances not to change in retirement, we've got 40 years of experience, personal experience that applies to us, to work out what our living expenses is. And sitting down with a list and trying to itemise things is just bunk. Mm,
well, okay. That's fine if you've got it under control, but there's a lot of people that don't. and that's why identifying these things specifically is really important. And whether you like it or not, like I said, things wear out and bits drop off. And, you know, we see people that are going absolutely nuts at 65, but I tell you what, they're not doing the same things at 85 that we're doing at 65. And all of us will know an elderly couple that somehow manages to save just off the basic pension. So it is all about what your expenses are, and I absolutely accept your observation that you know what you spend, but a lot of people don't, and they also assume, like a lot of us do, that things are going to go up when we retire. Well, like I'm saying, is the lifestyle doesn't change that much. Occasionally you'll see a hobby taken up, but then that's often offset by the fact that you're not paying for, you know, the cafes or the coffees and stuff that you might have, or even just transport getting to work and back again. All those things change. So look, if you've got it under control and you know what your budget is, that's fine, but that is actually the first step in a successful plan, is to know what your money's being spent on.
Yes, fair point, Greg. As I say, a lot of people, if you're comfortable, that's good, but a lot of people, I think, aren't as confident as you are. Hello, Rosemary.
Good evening. One issue that you haven't addressed directly is longevity. So, I mean, I have my super not in bad shape, in other words, in terms of sheer numbers, but I also have a very old parents.
Yeah.
So my super, which, if you look at it now, you'd say, well, that's good, but it has to last 30 years.
There's no doubt that that, yes, you're quite right. And life expectancy, every time we see the new life expectancy tables come out after a census, it's sort of going up 2 or 3 years. You know, it's a really interesting discussion going on with clients now about quality of life, and that is a big topic now. It's all good to be living to your 90, but actually, you know, is everything doing what you want it to do? But you're quite right. So it is about assessing things, and I've never advocated, you know, the best plan is when you spend the last dollar on the last day. Well, none of us are going to be able to do that accurately. So it's about reassessing what our needs are, what our capital requirements are going to be at different stages through retirement. And I would hate for anyone to think that, oh, you do this at 65 and you never look at it again, because you do have to look at it again. Life changes. All sorts of things will come along which will impact on you know, your financial position. And as I said right at the outset, there is nothing wrong. In fact, I'd encourage, and we, you know, the best situation, we've got a lot more than the 270 grand. But what really gets me is the folks that are getting into close to retirement, they've got a modest amount in savings and investments. They go and see someone that tries to talk them into some very risky investment strategy, and it all goes pear-shaped, and we end up in a worse position than where we started. So, you know, it's kind of dealing with what you've got and understanding how to make the most of what you've got and not getting sucked into thinking you've got to go and do silly investing.
Yeah, no, I agree. But my financial people are very gloomy about, you know, oh, you, and they're very much, oh, you need 2 million, you know, their assessment of what people need now is quite high.
What are they saying to you, Rosemary?
Oh, they regard seven figures as being quite a low amount, and that really the seven...
They say $1 million. They say $1 million is not enough.
No. Yes, they do. They say it's not enough. They say really you should have probably a couple of million minimum to be okay.
Right. Well, almost. I mean, very few people have that.
And that's the thing. And look, you know, without sort of knocking my colleagues, let's not forget that most financial planners out there or advisors are paid on a percentage of how much money they're looking after. And the same with super funds. Mm. So, you know, if you're getting charged a percentage of how much money that you've got, then there's a kind of inherent incentive to get as much invested as you possibly can. So I'd encourage people where they can to actually seek out those advisors and planners that don't charge on that basis. They actually charge like a lawyer, a flat dollar per hour.
No, they do. These people charge a fixed fee.
Okay.
They're actually pretty solid. So they charge a fixed fee.
Why do they say you need $2 million, Rosemary? That's for a single person.
Oh, I think, yes, it's a single. I think, to be fair, they say, well, what do you do and what's your lifestyle? What do you spend? So I think what they're basing it on is probably on what's happening now.
Sure.
Mm. And so realistically, in effect, I think they're saying, look, if you want to keep going as you are, you really need to buck what's up a bit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've just got to spend less.
Yeah.
Which is
true.
A reasonable proposition.
Sure. I mean, everyone's got different spending patterns.
And they do. And if you're, you know, if you're frequent travel and all that, then, you know, there are families where travel is actually one of their core costs. If they've got family interstate or something like that, and there's visiting them once or twice per year, that actually has to be taken into consideration when you're working out budgets and what sort of capital sums required.
Mm. Okay. Thanks, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I mean, that's true, isn't it? I mean, and what's an overseas trip going to cost you these days?
Depends on which end of the plane.
Well, I know how long a piece of string, but
yeah.
It's going to cost you at least $10,000.
Oh, look, and we tell people up to $25,000 a trip. Yeah. But interestingly too, Phil, we get people that come to see us and say, well, this year I'm going to go off to Europe. We're going to have a fantastic time, $25,000. Next year we're going to the States, and after that we're going to South America. And sort of 2 years into retirement, so South America next year, oh, we're buggered. So that's what I'm saying about having the flexibility to change. So actually what we talk about is making sure you plan for these things. Now, whether you expend them or not, it's kind of neither here nor there, but at least if you've allowed for it, you know, the things that come up that you might not be expecting, one of the big things that we're seeing these days is people accessing money on behalf of their kids. And it's often to pay for legal costs with family bust-ups, or particularly now with indebtedness, helping kids out, paying off loans and things like that. Far more accessing super for helping out their family than perhaps 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm. Yes. All right. Bob says, good evening. I'm 65, single. I've just retired. I've got $600,000 in my pension fund. I worry about the fees that I pay to my financial advisor, AMP. Mm. Is there any way I can check other funds and their charges? Can I move my money?
Absolutely. There is nothing to stop you rolling your money over into any other fund, whether it's an industry fund
Even when you've retired.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. And now, there's one little thing to be very careful of. If you retired and you were on a pension at the age of, January 2015, 2016, there was some special rules that used to apply for account-based pensions for pensioners at that stage. If you move it or change it to something new now, you'd be caught up under the new rules, which are not quite as attractive as the old rules. So if someone's got something that's pre-January 2015, they were already on a Centrelink income support payment, and let's say that fund's worth more than about $300,000, you probably need to get a bit of advice just to make sure. And it can be from Centrelink that you're not doing yourself out of money by shifting it across. But yes, you can roll it over to any fund. The best starting point for anyone that's looking to sort of get their head around what what they're paying, what's fair and equitable, is to visit the MoneySmart website, moneysmart.gov.au. .gov.au tells you it's a government site. It's actually ASIC's consumer website. It's really, really good. Not only can you follow the tabs to find out how superannuation works and fees and charges, but also picking an advisor, what sort of questions you should be asking, what sort of costs and fees. But to answer your question, in my view, the market these days is a total price of about 1% per year to run the thing. And now you can have variations on that, up to sort of 1.2, 1.5. But what we see with some of these older funds...
You shouldn't be paying more than that.
No, I reckon. Yeah, 1.2. 1%. Yeah, something like that. Something like that in totality.
All right. Dave, hello. Just quickly before we get to the top of the hour. Hi, Dave. Sorry, you've been waiting on there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I've got two questions, actually. You were talking very early in the piece, the 35K pension Centrelink.
Mm-hmm.
What's the age that you can access?
So right now, it's actually 65 and a half, and it's been going up steadily. So if your birthday, your 66th birthday is after 1st of July this year, it's actually going to 66 years of age. It's slowly making its way up for anyone born after January 1957 to 67 years of age. So if you're in that category, it's 67. Now, there was legislation to lift it to 70. That never got through, and there's a lot of people that think it's actually 70 years of age. But right now, 65 and a half going to 66.
Okay. And the second question I might have is capital gains.
Yeah.
We have another property on the Gold Coast,
mm-hmm.
which we have rented out for almost 19 years. If we move back in there and for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
how does capital gains work?
So it's generally done on a proportion basis, the period that you had it in. So how long were you living out of it for?
19 years.
Right. Okay. So it's 19. I'm just doing my maths here in my head. So that takes us back to 1990, whatever. Yeah. Okay. So it's post capital gains. So it's basically based on the proportion that it was not being used as your primary dwelling. You'd be paying capital gains tax on that, and you'd probably want to get a valuation at that date.
At the date.
Yeah. You can get it done retrospectively.
Okay.
At the date that you move back in.
At the date we move back in.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Righto.
And you probably pay tax on that.
You pay tax on some tax on that?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Dave. Thanks. Thanks for that. For listeners under 40, when the age pension has gone or greatly diminished, how much does a single non-homeowner who can't get the pension need?
Well, that's one of the other things that I really look at very closely. Currently, the age pension represents about 2.9% of GDP. Now, everyone thinks, it's going to go up. But, of course, what they're forgetting is superannuation and transgenerational wealth being transferred down. In fact, the projections show pensions as a function of GDP about 2.7% in the next sort of 20, 30 years. It's actually going down.
It's going down. Hmm. Yeah, okay. All right. Don't panic. More reasons why you don't need $1 million to retire. Well, I mean, I think don't panic is good advice because partly, I mean, I'm a great fan of the life philosophy, Nick, that there's no point in panicking about things you can't do much about.
That's true.
And if you get to 50, if you get to your late 50s or early 60s and you haven't got enough, well then... There's no point in panicking.
And all you got to do is understand the system.
Just understand the system.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very good advice. The book is called Don't Panic, More Reasons You Don't Need $1 Million to Retire Well. But it does repay. It does repay a little study just to understand the system. It is complicated. I know that. But, to some degree, once you sit down and get your head around it, it provides you with a lot of peace of mind as well.
Once you're in the system, it's a lot easier.
That's right. Nick, excellent to have your expertise. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Nick Bruning's financial planner. And author of Don't Panic, Why You Don't Need $1 Million to Retire Well.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.